Okay, I'm gonna give a little bio on Linda Lai, who, by the way, will be joining us tomorrow night at the Reading Tea Party. And we're going to talk about the Third and Fourth Amendment with Linda as well this morning. But Linda Lai is a staff attorney at the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California, where she focuses on free speech, open government, and privacy issues. Her current litigation includes a suit against the University of California at Davis for its use of pepper spray on student protesters, and another against the city of Oakland for its crackdown on peaceful Occupy Oakland protesters. And, you know, the thing that I've pointed out many times, and I find to be a real breakthrough in this movement, this peaceful revolution to take our country back, is that the Tea Party, who has been labeled many, many things in the last 4 or 5 years, has now aligned on many levels with the ACLU. And there's a time when no one ever thought that that would happen, but at the end of the day, we all love our Constitution and want to preserve it with its original intents. So good morning, Linda.
Good morning. I'm so delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. You know, you were on Sovereign Minds Radio last weekend, and I loved your show. It was fantastic, and I know that you're going to be joining us tomorrow night. And I kind of got in contact with you because of this Salon article on the paramilitary style of our local police forces and the increase in police force across the United States, and I thought this is something perfect for Linda to weigh in on.
Oh, thank you so much. I think that's an excellent jumping-off point for the issue we initially got in touch with over drones and the City of Reading's recent decision to join Ventura County's bid to be a drone testing site. And I think there are a lot of connections. So I'm happy to start chatting unless you want to direct me with some more specific questions.
Well, you know, we'll be taking a top-of-the-hour break here in about 3.5 minutes, but maybe very quickly, you can give us your thoughts on we'll go into more depth after the top of the hour, but overall, are you concerned about the increase in paramilitary force?
Absolutely. Technology, you know, whether it's armored tanks or body armor for law enforcement or drones, technology can be used for good or for ill, but what we need to do is have a rational, open, and participatory discussion about whether the benefits really outweigh the costs. Now, we hear a lot in the name of national security. Apparently, that has justified reading our emails and monitoring all of our calls.
Yeah.
But the public really deserves nothing less than the opportunity to find out, okay, what are the purposes that we think this new technology is going to be used for? Will it only be used for that? And do we believe as a society that the privacy costs will make sense given the benefits? The answer may vary from situation to situation, but we deserve to participate in that robust debate.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, you know, it's funny, people get hung up on the left-right thing and the politics of it, but at the end of the day, it's a huge freedom issue.
Mm-hmm. For everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm delighted that we can approach this in an absolutely postpartisan way, that here are specific issues which we should all care about. We all have individual privacy rights, and that's the case no matter where you are on the political spectrum.
Exactly. And we're finding that are you finding that people are more interested now in learning about what their rights are than they haven't been in the past?
Well, that's the fascinating thing. As someone who works on privacy and technology, the drone debate in particular has really sparked people's outrage and imagination. And it's really galvanized people across the spectrum in a way that I find very energizing and exciting. And the thing that's also interesting is that the concerns raised by drones are the same concerns that we should have about video surveillance, about all kinds of surveillance. So if you care about the issues raised by drones, if those resonate with you, there's a host of other issues,
absolutely,
you know, including militarization of the police.
We're going to come right back with you after the top of the hour. We've got to fit in some news here. We'll be right back with Linda Lai
on KCNR Shasta Radio.
And And we're back from our commercial break. You are joining Hour 2 of We the People Radio with your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and our show producer and musical savant, Bob Martin. And we're talking about the Third and Fourth Amendments today, the militarization, the paramilitary-style force of our local police forces, how it's spreading across the country,
drones,
the destruction of our Third and Fourth Amendment rights under the Constitution of the United States. And currently we have Linda Lai on the line. Linda is a staff attorney for the ACLU of Northern California. And she specifically is talking about the connection between our lack of privacy and the destruction of our Third and Fourth Amendment rights.
Thanks so much. I think there are two key connections between the militarization of the police and the drones example. One is the issue of mission creep. When the government has a new toy, they're going to use it. And so we see with SWAT teams in that fabulous article on the militarization of police that Elizabeth, you and I chatted about, that SWAT teams were intended to be for very, very high-risk, unusual situations. And what we see in use as a practical matter is that SWAT teams are being deployed for really very mundane arrest warrants to enforce things that are frankly quite trivial, like beer labeling compliance at a bar. That's not something you need, many armed individuals storming private property for. So what we see is a phenomenon of mission creep. We've certainly seen it with SWAT teams, and we know it happens with new technology as well. When the government trots out the latest gizmo and they say, oh, this will help us make our borders more safe. Well, what do we see? Customs and Border Patrol has drones. They use it to patrol the border, but documents recently released in early July show that between 2010 and 2012, there was an eightfold increase in Customs and Border Patrol loaning out their drones to other agencies. So they're using it for non-border patrol purposes. This is a classic example of mission creep. Borders today are backyards tomorrow. The second issue I think that's really connected between the militarization of the police and drones and other new surveillance technology is the budgeting process and the way in which we, the people, participate or are shut out from the decision-making process. A lot of these new forms of equipment are funded through state and often federal grants. And so what that means is it doesn't necessarily go through the same budgeting process that it would if the Redding City Council or the Shasta County Board of Supervisors were looking at its budget. It's free money to the agency. It's use it or lose it. So instead of our local elected decision makers saying, we have limited resources. Do we need this? What should we spend our precious tax dollars on? If it's free money, the law enforcement entity applies for the grant, they raise it with the Board of Supervisors or the City Council, and then the local legislative body typically just does not give it the same level of review as if it were coming out of the local coffers. So that shuts the public out of the process. It just really limits the ability of the public to participate directly in that decision to acquire the new technology.
Yeah, and I think that when the point that you made, it's funny, it's the same thing Stephen Greenhut said. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as they get all these toys, they want to use them.
Sure.
And, you know, it's terrible to think that we never grow up past that, but I guess it's...
Yeah. And the problem is they have to use them on us. I mean, can't they do drills?
Sure, but... I guess it
wouldn't be as much fun.
No, but at the end of the day, you look at it and... So Linda, what are you seeing, like, okay, with the drones and the technology like that? I don't see them getting that type of technology, having it, and then only using it occasionally just for very specific purposes.
Well, I think that's a real danger, and it's why we... I look at it this way. I try to be an optimist. I think drones present a remarkable opportunity for local communities to get engaged Right now, we have a little bit of breathing room because the process for getting a certificate of authorization from the Federal Aviation Administration to operate a drone is pretty slow, although that will change. The FAA is going to have to come up with a plan for integrating drones into domestic airspace by the end of 2015. But in between now and then, we have an opportunity to really be active at the local level. Each time we need to be have our eyes like hawks on our local law enforcement to figure out if they're thinking about acquiring a drone, and if they are, to be very, very active. I'm very proud to have been part of a campaign in Alameda County, which is the county that I live in, that wanted to be the first local law enforcement entity in California to actually acquire a drone. When we got wind of that, we mobilized a grassroots coalition, we let the press know, we contacted the Board of Supervisors, and there was a tremendous outpouring by the community telling the Board of Supervisors, whoa, you need to slow down. This is not necessarily what we need. We need a lot more information before the sheriff goes forward. What purposes will he use the drone for? What are the privacy controls? What happens to the data once it's collected? All of these questions need to be answered before we can make an informed decision about whether it even makes sense to get a drone. We completely slowed down the process. It's not really clear whether the sheriff is still going to go forward with acquiring a drone, but he certainly understands that the process needs to be very transparent, and he can't just unilaterally proceed without having safeguards in place so that we all know what are the drones going to be used for, what's going to happen to the data.
Yeah, now how do you see that progressing? Is that going to wind up being local policy? I mean, is that city, county, state? I mean,
that's an excellent question. I think it's going to happen at all levels. We're seeing,
okay.
Legislation introduced at the federal level. There were two bills introduced this year at the state level in Sacramento to regulate drones. Unfortunately, neither is as strong as we would like them to be. So we don't exactly know what's going to happen to that legislation, but there's certainly legislators in Sacramento are recognizing the need to address it. And I think we also all have to be active at the local level. One of the things that's really key is that there has to be a framework in place, either strict policy or strict statutes that provide a framework for using drones. And here's why. Technology evolves far more rapidly than the Constitution. So basically, the process of making constitutional law in the courts is very slow. There were years during which law enforcement was using GPS devices, installing them on people's cars without getting a warrant, and only last year did the Supreme Court finally weigh in and say, no, you can't do that. So we can't rely, while I believe firmly that the Fourth Amendment and its protection against unreasonable searches and seizures means that the police should not be using drones without a warrant to fly over my backyard, it's going to be a while before we get clear rulings from the court saying that. So before that happens, we need to have clear guidelines in place that our elected leaders write and put into place to protect our privacy.
You know, I had a conversation with my mother when this drone issue came up. She surprised me a little bit by her thoughts about it, but she didn't see a problem with them because if it meant that it was going to keep us safe, then we should use them. And I said, well, what do you feel about your Fourth Amendment rights? And how would you feel if some level of law enforcement decided to come to your home and go through your home and search it because they thought maybe you had something to hide? And she said, well, I would be okay with that because if I'm not doing anything wrong and I've got nothing to hide, what's the problem? Well, here's the problem. I seriously doubt that if some level of law enforcement showed up at your front doorstep, they're not going to ring the bell and say, good afternoon, ma'am.
Yeah.
How are you today? We were wondering if we might be able to come in and search your home to make sure that you're safe. Would that be all right with you this afternoon?
Yeah, no kidding.
Generally, what they're going to do is bust your door down with their guns drawn.
Yeah,
and if your dog barks, they're going to shoot it.
Well, since you brought it up, I'm asking Linda too, because I ask everybody. You know, in Boston, when after the bombing, and they were looking for what's his face, the brother, and they were pulling people out of their houses. What? I mean, were there people who said, you know, no, thank you? And if so, what happened to them? Do you have any other intel on what happened to just the regular folks on the street?
There are exceptions for under the Fourth Amendment for what's called the hot pursuit. If there's a dangerous felon fleeing, the police, you know, for instance, can say the dangerous felon runs from the scene, leaps over a fence into someone's backyard, the police can also pursue that person because of the emergency nature of the situation. So the Fourth Amendment allows for that sort of situation. Now, for them to go beyond the scope of just, like, running through the backyard to look for the person and then to start rummaging through someone's house and personal belongings would be a quite different issue. But there are the constitutional doctrine does recognize an exception for emergency-type situations when you are in pursuit of someone who presents a danger to the public.
Okay, because they were, I mean, they were pulling people out of their house. Here were people in, you could tell they weren't dressed for going anywhere. Mm-hmm. They were at home doing stuff. And they were pulled out and taken down on the sidewalk with their hands over their head while the police ran into their houses. And those were films from neighbors.
That part seems a little bit alarming in terms of going beyond the scope of what's really necessary in order to, obviously running through the back of a backyard chasing someone the suspect that you saw going there, that makes sense. But the invasiveness of that approach, I think the goal could have been accomplished without being as intrusive or scaring the bejesus out of those poor people.
Yeah, they did it to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And at the time when I was watching some of these videos shot by neighbors, looking out there, I thought, God, this is freaky. Mm-hmm. Here they're looking out of their windows, filming their neighbors being dragged out by the police so that they can go in their house and search. And I'm thinking, okay, so if those people weren't home, are they going to break the door down and go in?
Sure.
And then when you come back from your vacation or wherever you were, the grocery, your door's hanging off the hinges, do we get to do that?
And also, when they do damage to your personal property in their pursuit of whatever
that's
they're pursuing,
that's kind of tough luck too. Huh?
Is it SOL for you, or do they cover the cost of repairs?
That's a secret insider term, SOL. Actually,
to lawyers that means statute of limitations. But
not what I meant.
That is outstanding, outstanding. Definitely statute of limitations. ROR. Okay. So what about all that? Where does that all fit?
I think where that fits is often there are different ways. There are a number of tools we have. Some are more effective than others, but there are a number of tools we have to keep our government accountable when they do things that look like overreach. Sometimes it's a lawsuit for, suing for damages. Sometimes it's some kind of administrative claim. And sometimes it's making our elected leaders hear us, showing up at public meetings, and voicing our concerns and going to the ballot box. So I think and writing letters to the editor, doing what you do, having a talk show radio and promoting discussion, I think these are all important ways of standing up when we see government overreach.
And what do you see from just, average people out there? Are people alarmed by these things? Are they good with it? Where are the folks that you talk to, especially down like in the Bay Area?
I think you see a real range, and what you mentioned about your mother's mm-hmm. Reaction to the drones, I think, is a very common one. I don't have anything to hide, but I think if we really drill down on that, if we talk about the level of surveillance that's happening, we need to really think through carefully whether we want to surrender all of our personal private information to the government. I may have, I don't violate the law. I have nothing to hide in that sense, but I have at home confidential medical files about certain medical conditions. I don't want the government knowing about that. In addition, when the government accumulates vast amount of data, things that look really innocent can be twisted. I mean, speaking of the Boston bombing situation, I own a pressure cooker because it's a really good way of cooking lentils.
Oh, we've gone right to pressure cooker.
and I actually had to buy a new one recently because my old one burned. And my fiance said, I don't think we should order that online because then the government's going to
think we're terrorists. And tell me, how sad is that?
God.
How sad is that?
That is just, all right, we've gone somewhere that we like, actually. That's just, we had an incident up here right after that. Some lady left her pressure cooker on the sidewalk down in Red Bluff. Sleepy little town of Red Bluff, she left it out on the sidewalk by one of the stores, and oh my gosh, we had to roll out all the big guns there.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, she ultimately just really had a pressure cooker. Imagine that. We're going to be right back with Linda. We've got to thank our advertisers here. We've found some music for you folks. We're in a music-free zone, but we'll be back. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM.
Time is really wasted.
Radio, chatting and streaming live worldwide at wethepeopleradio.us. We're with Linda Lai, staff attorney for the ACLU. We're talking about drones, home invasions by paramilitary police forces, Third and Fourth Amendments. And Linda, we know that you have to wrap it up at 9:30, so where would you like to go in the last 5 minutes?
I just wanted to say I'm so excited to be here, and I'm really excited to talking to the Tea Party live and in person tomorrow
night. Yeah, that's
going to
be fantastic.
So thank you so much for the opportunity. I guess I think when it comes to new technology, again, there are lots of benefits. We all love, reading the news on the internet, the convenience of being able to shop on the internet. These are wonderful things, but they can also become tools for surveillance. So it's not, I don't think that we can just have a blanket reaction that, technology or drones necessarily a bad thing. There may be some beneficial uses, for example, monitoring hotspots and responding to a fire, identifying a potential, if there's a bomb, going in and monitoring it to see how we can explode it in a way that keeps people safe. That's wonderful. But what we should not be taken in by is the rhetoric and the hype. Just because the government says it's going to make us safer doesn't mean that we should give them carte blanche. They should not just get a blank check to do whatever they want with it, because we know from all of the Snowden revelations that they're doing a lot of the things in the name of national security that if they had to tell us about, people wouldn't be so happy. So I think the same thing applies equally to drones, and it's a great opportunity, an important responsibility for us to be active and engaged, to keep an eye out on the government and to participate, because that's our right.
And
and it's a great opportunity.
And Linda, it's funny how it always comes back to that, because no matter what issue we're discussing, we always circle back to you need to be aware, involved, and engaged as a citizen of a free country, and especially
absolutely.
At the local level. Where
absolutely,
you can
absolutely.
Affect change.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, you're going to have some hot tips for folks tomorrow?
I'm sorry?
Tomorrow night. Do you have hot tips for the folks? Oh, and are you meeting with City Council? Did that ever pull itself together?
I am meeting with a few people individually,
and
folks have been really gracious about trying to make schedule time on their busy schedules. So I just want to share information with them about the decision-making process when when our local civilian elected leaders approve a drone. It's not simple. There have to be good privacy protections in place. There's something called fair information practice principles about responsible ways for using personal data. Drones have the potential to be used for warrantless mass surveillance. And that is not something that's acceptable on a sort of personal level, a policy level, a constitutional level. So there are, when our elected leaders say, sure, we can become a drone testing site, they should be drilling down a lot more, because there are a lot more questions that need to be asked. For what purpose is the drone going to be used, and what's going to happen to the data once it's collected? will I have a right to see data about myself? Is the data going to be handed off to law enforcement to then go sort of comb through and circulate? Is the data going to just be set free for anyone who's curious about what plants I'm growing in my backyard? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a big native plant person. I just put in a bunch of plants recently, but it's really not anyone's business. My yard is also really tidy. It's really not tidy right now. I don't want anyone else mm-hmm. taking a look at it. One of the things that's really different about drones from aerial forms of surveillance is the surreptitiousness. If I'm enjoying a sunny afternoon in my backyard, say sunbathing nude, I don't know if a drone is flying overhead
sure.
and capturing images of me naked in my backyard. If there's a helicopter, I can grab a robe and protect my privacy. But if there's a drone, it's a very different calculus.
Mm-hmm. And
what happens to the data is super important.
Well, what about the folks that say, well, we already have Google Earth, so you can already zoom in on somebody's
yard.
Yeah,
but I don't think Google Earth
well,
is...
I don't either, yeah. But what would be your...
It's not in real time.
Yeah. I mean, those are... I don't know how often they take those pictures, but what's the difference? What would be the distinction that you would make?
The difference is the comprehensiveness of the surveillance, exactly as you guys just said, the you know, Google Street View. It's just a snapshot in time. It's not monitoring constantly what I'm doing. The other issue is that Google's been sued for Street View. You know, there are some
really?
Instances where they, in some instances, they, when their cars went driving around, they ended up picking up, capturing information about people's routers and internet networks.
I'm sure.
So that's not necessarily, I mean, that's an example of, yes, there are similarities to Google Street View, and they're problematic, and there are differences that make drones even more problematic than Google Street View.
Interesting. And because Google Street View does it use the cameras at the intersections and things like that? Is anything tied into that yet?
Well, it's interesting you say this. So I think my understanding of Google Street View is that they have a car that runs up and down. But there are also obviously many cities and private entities that have video surveillance, closed-circuit television. The city of Oakland recently approved something called the Domain Awareness situation, where it received federal Homeland Security grant funding. Again, we go back to the federal funding. And it allows the Port of Oakland to connect up all of the different surveillance systems, not only in the port, but also in the city of Oakland, so that you can have all of the automated license plate readers connecting up to the CCTV, and then you have advanced analytics with, you know, all kinds of things, potentially facial recognition software. This will eventually, by aggregating the data, it's not just a point in time, it's not just the information of, you know, I crossed the street of this intersection at X time, but it's by linking all of those surveillance systems together, we get very comprehensive pictures of where each of us goes, who we see, what we do, when we do it. That's very, very detailed personal information that's sensitive and that the government shouldn't be tracking.
They shouldn't be doing a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is,
too numerous to list.
Yeah, and if anybody's paying attention at all, they have to know that given an inch, the government will take a mile. And
charge you for it.
And charge you for it, coming and going. But to think that anything is going to be used with discretion and used appropriately, I mean, that's just naive.
So my approach is, you know, trust but verify.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Yeah. What is it? It's on the bottom of all my emails. In God we trust, all others we question.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Yeah. There's quite a bit. And is this giving you guys lots of work? I don't know how the ACLU actually operates, but I would imagine this is a target-rich environment, as they say.
It absolutely is. And I think that, again, you know, there are different tools we have in our toolbox. Some of it is advocacy, and, you know, that goes from the local state to the federal level. And then some of it is litigation. You know, it just depends. A lot of it is public education, too. I think exactly what you guys are doing is so critical.
Do you find that, because I did have somebody call and was concerned, you know, what are we doing with the ACLU at our meeting? That's going to... I mean, they're not on our team.
I think
team.
It's fantastic.
They're not on our team. And I was like, well.
Yeah, they are.
Really, what team are we on?
Yeah,
because
there isn't a team.
We should be on the
Yeah.
You know, on the information team.
On the team of the people?
So, but it's interesting Absolutely. Because people have really hard mm-hmm. lines drawn about some of these things. And I'm just wondering from your end, do you see a lot of that kind of
What do you mean you're going to talk to the Tea Party?
Yeah, do you see it kind of blurring and morphing?
My colleagues are so excited that I'm going
nice.
To talk to the Tea Party.
Nice.
So we just love reaching out across the political spectrum. Mm-hmm, the ACLU mm-hmm. is actually a nonpartisan organization.
True.
I think we're often perceived
well, and so,
not
and
that
really,
way.
So is the Tea Party.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And yet we've all been pigeonholed.
Mm-hmm. and I think this just, you know, speaks tremendously to both of our organizations' ability to rise above the immediate politics framework mm-hmm. and look at the issues, what matters.
I mean, we the people really sums it up because that's, at the end of the day, that's what it's about.
Absolutely.
That is awesome.
I'm so excited to be coming and seeing
yes.
you in person tomorrow.
It will be
Thank
fun.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you for jumping on board with us this morning on such short notice. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And don't forget to go to wethepeopleradio.us to check out everything about Linda Lai.
Exactly. And so the Tea Party is in Reading tomorrow night. Destiny Fellowship Church, 2570 South Bonneview.
6 o'clock
p.m.
sharp.
We meet every week. So make it tomorrow and you'll hear more from Linda. Thanks, Linda. We'll let you get to your 10 o'clock thing.
Great.
Whatever it is you're supposed to do. I hope it's a fun thing.
Thanks, Linda.
Thanks. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
And on that uninformed note, since I didn't know what her thing was, we're going to take a really quick break here. We'll come back. Thank our advertisers a little bit here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Silver wings shining in the sunlight. Roaring engines headed somewhere in flight. They're taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight.